Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Because if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan, you people wouldn't be here. If it wasn't for Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff would still be selling meat from a truck in Minneapolis. And if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan, all these Johnny-come-latelys that you see out here, wrestling wouldn't be here. Episode 99, Jeff. We've done 99 of these things. Can you believe it?
Count it down, man. Like, it's just craziness. Absolute craziness.
We're going balls to the wall because we're taking one of, I mean, you know, this has just been, we kind of held off on some things. We did the Mick Foley Mankind, which is like obviously one of the most famous matches ever, arguably the most famous match ever. Arguably this one is, I mean, this is super important in the history of the business as well. Top ones. This is going to be great. And then, as you know, episode 100 after this, which we have something really cool, really special planned that I'm super excited about. And I know you are too.
Yeah, absolutely. No. And this is one that, it's all exciting. You and I, when we first set out to do this, we were like, well, let's see what happens. And now we're 2 years later, 100 episodes. We've got 300 more in the tank, like, you know,
a couple hundred thousand people have listened to this thing. How crazy is that when you add it up? You know, you're like, we're doing okay. Nice little podcast here. Just a fun little project for you and I. And then you go, wow, we've hundreds of thousands of people over these 100 episodes. So thank you so much for supporting the show and listening and hitting us on social media and telling people about it. We truly appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got more to come. So that's all right. So we got a special episode next week, but this week we got a special episode too. Plain and simple.
Why are we covering? I mean, I know why we're covering this, but why are you excited to cover it? Let me ask you that.
Yeah, it's a good way to phrase it. I think this is one where I think obviously we're at the anniversary on this one.
And 25 so, years. That 25 years feel old. I don't know what does.
Right. And so, you know, looking back on this one, 1996, I was just a young scamp myself in middle school, you know, but vividly remember this kind of happening and just kind of, you know, being a part of this was nuts, plain and simple. And I think that you're dead on that. For me, I think like last week, Mankind and the Undertaker, you know, it was just great. And I think that that is, for me, that's probably the most iconic kind of, you know, moment in wrestling history in a lot of ways. It definitely, you know, I would say on my Mount Rushmore, because that's all anybody can talk about anymore. If not the Mount Rushmore moment. And this, like, that was iconic in regards to just how it looked and how it played out. But in regards to changing the landscape of wrestling, boy, this one, like, it's hard to compare. Like, there's been great matches along the way. There's been, you know, influential people to the industry, but this moment itself, like, who could have thunk, you know?
Now, were you watching this live? Do you remember where you were for this match?
No, this one I was not watching live, but I do remember it being the buzz, actually, because, you know, I remember it being the buzz in school, though, like that week, because that was when I had, you know, my buddies and we'd watch and, you know, separately and then talk about it. And, you know, I remember us discussing this, though, one of those weird memories that's in there, but not live, but I know we talked about it after.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to watch it live. We had one of those, a friend of mine had one of those scramblers. So we watched a lot of the pay-per-views. I was not watching every WCW pay-per-view then, but I'm like, I got to watch this thing. And it's just one of those moments in wrestling where I guess unless you read the dirt sheets, and you know, Hogan's name was floated a few days before this, which we'll get into during the match. But I mean, I had no clue. You know, because what I had heard or read or whatever we did in 1996, talked about on AOL, I guess, maybe. But I'm thinking Sting or Luger. And I probably would have been shocked if it was Savage. So I had no clue, you know, and you're right in that sweet spot where you don't think you know everything and you haven't thought of it yet. And I'm 12 years old and we'll talk more about it. But I remember just being shocked. Holy shit. I mean, in the history of the business, how many just holy shit, oh my God, real true moments are there? You know, and I'm talking like top tier all time. You know, there's the Hogan heel turn. There's Foley getting thrown off the cage. There's Taker losing.
Yep.
I mean, right? Maybe there's two or three others that are in that like top, you were shocked category. And I know there's a lot of great surprises and great things that have happened over the years, but I'm just talking like never in a million years. Oh my God. So anyways, this was such a blast. We got so much to talk about. I don't even know if we're going to be able to fit it all in, but I'm really excited for this one. How about you?
Yeah, we're going to get into it because this is a fun one to watch. It's a fun one to talk about. And, you know, let's just jump right in.
All right, let's get into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
All right. So July 7th, 1996, WCW Bash at the Beach 1996. We're at the Daytona Beach Ocean Center, 8,300. The show started off with what was ranked, according to Meltzer's reader poll, by far the best match. So he had 182 people submit the poll. Serious question. Like, I wonder back in 96 how people submitted to the poll. I'm assuming they probably emailed him, right? Like, hey, after the show, yeah, email or leave a message. I mean, I'm guessing by then it was email. So 182 people voted in this poll. 172 said the best match was this opener, Mysterio Jr. and Psychosis. The other 10 said the main event. So just apparently a great match. I mean, maybe one we even want to cover. And really, this pay-per-view, as we might get into later, was extremely well received. 74.4% thumbs up. So people loved it. So we open with the cruiserweights. Then we get John Tenta, Earthquake, defeating Earthquake. Big Bubba, Big Boss Man, with Jimmy Hart. So a very WWF match there with some just shit ass gimmicks in a Carson City Silver Dollar match. I have no idea what that is. Man, this was a gimmick. This was like an uncensored pay-per-view because then we get DDP defeating Jim Duggan in a taped fist match. Then we get the Nasty Boys defeating Public Enemy in a double dog collar match. So, Jeff, I don't know if you and I talked about this or if I read this somewhere or what, but the Nasties had some kind of fun street fights back in this era at WCW. So I'm sure that was a fun match. Dean Malenko, your cruiserweight champion, defeating Disco Inferno by submission. I would assume the four-leaf clover. Steve McMichael is going to defeat Joe Gomez in 6 minutes and 44 seconds. My guess is that match was probably about 5 minutes and 44 seconds longer than it should have been. But, you know, and thoughts go out to Steve McMichael really battling a very, very bad condition. Just tough to see some of those pictures of these people that you think of as these big, tough, you know, just statues of humanity. It's just tough to see them suffering like that.
That was a negative half star match too. Okay. That's rough. Yeah.
And then we get Ric Flair winning the United States Championship in 15 minutes by defeating Conan. He was accompanied by Miss Elizabeth and Woman. Then we get the Giant and the Taskmaster defeating Arn Anderson and Chris Benoit in 8 minutes. And then the reason we're here, main event, six-man tag, the Outsiders, along with their special third man that they didn't even really know up until the last minute. That's the great part about this.
About the week before,
defeating, we typically don't spoil this, but I think we all know how this one ends. But they would go against Randy Savage, Sting, and Lex Luger. So, technically a no contest.
The winners of this one are that's less relevant. Yeah.
So that Mysterio Psychosis match got 4.25 stars, and then, you know, nothing else remarkable on the show. But overall, man, a really, really good show. You know, and WWF was doing some good stuff around this time too, because ironically, you know, you talk about some big moments. This is right on the heels of King of the Ring, where you had Steve Austin become Austin 316. And you know, he was just, I forget what he was just on. I think he was on Busted Open Radio recently, and he was just talking about the story of that. And again, it's just none of that was planned. The Stone Cold Said So, that was new. The Austin 316 was only because of Jake Roberts cutting a religious promo and Michael Hayes telling him about it. It's just crazy. But then you had Davey and Sean, Taker and Mankind, Warrior and Lawler all on that show too. So, man, you talk about a fun time to be a wrestling fan. 96, 97, 98. One more thought for you. And then I want to walk through the build because this is, you know, one of the great builds in wrestling history. Yep. You know, I feel like we look at these and maybe I'm just romanticizing and I'm just an old man that says, hey, it was better the way it used to be. But I just think about these pay-per-views, Jeff. And I know we just picked two randomly out of a hat, but the previous WWF one and then this one, think about all the things that happened. Okay. And then, you know, we recently just had Hell in a Cell. What are you going to remember in 6 months that happened on that show? Well, absolutely nothing. Right. It's just so, I just feel like the stuff that happened in this era was so much more iconic. And I really don't know why. All I can say is it's better. I even saw Mick Foley on the Austin podcast recently, and they were talking about those Mick Foley when he was Dude Love as a heel versus Stone Cold. I'm like, I still remember that main event was Over the Edge. He dropped him on the cars. It was a great, great, great match. Yep. So I still remember that, but I can't tell you what happened at WrestleMania Backlash.
Well, and you and I always say, like, name the champs. Like, it's someone pointed out, I think I saw it on Reddit, like, as of, like, when we're recording this, like, Sheamus hasn't defended his title since he won it.
What title? U.S. or Intercontinental? I think it's U.S., right?
Yeah, it's U.S., and it's been over 2 months.
But shame on AEW, too, because they're doing the same shit, okay? They're going to – I mean, they have what? They have women's, they have TNT, they have the world. Am I missing something?
Sure you are, but
I think they're going to add something. You know, they were talking about women's tag team titles. And, I mean, it's just – it just becomes too much, man. All right. Right.
Yeah.
Storyline. Okay. How do we, this is just one of the best builds ever.
So we'll start with, it was May 27th, 1996. This was in, you know, a couple weeks ago. And for those of us that, you know, we follow enough Instagram accounts and Twitter accounts, this video was making the rounds at the time. I'm sure everybody kind of saw it. This is when Scott Hall, made his first appearance on WCW television. I say Scott Hall because we didn't know who he was because at the time he was unnamed. He was unannounced, but showed up declaring, you know, that he was invading WCW and that, you know, he was here now. And so that video kind of making the rounds, he just kind of walks, you know, they're at the announce table and then he kind of walks up there as well and is kind of hanging out. But he kind of made the challenge to who at the time was the executive vice president at WCW, Eric Bischoff, that he wanted him to pick three of his best WCW wrestlers to take on two partners that Hall would, you know, eventually get to let us know all that stuff. So about three weeks later, Nash debuting on Nitro, as well, couldn't be called Scott Hall, couldn't be called what they were, Diesel Razor, just known as the Outsiders at the time. And so kind of rolling with that, but at this point you've got these two guys really coming over from WWF at the time, announcing that they were there, announcing that they, you know, going to be a part of this, and just kind of totally unexpected. It was one of those where, you know, them showing up, like, you would have never thought, like, you know, that is just how it was, you know, like you said, unless you kind of knew the dirt sheets at the time, like you and me being, I say, kids, younger, you know, we wouldn't have known what was happening and what was going on.
Can you imagine how much fun, and maybe it's still true today, I don't know, but how much fun it would have been to watch this stuff and not have a clue what was happening behind the scenes, like legitimately tuning into Nitro and being like, holy shit, that's Scott Hall. How's this? How's Razor Ramon? Like, how's this possible?
I wish I could still suspend that disbelief sometimes. Like,
oh yeah,
and there's been times where I've kind of quit reading the dirt sheets and kind of quit reading, you know, following the Twitters and stuff. And I actually do enjoy it a little bit more. I think that's why my partner, she enjoys, like, just like, you know, she'll come over and watch with me and she has no clue what's going on. Like, and what she likes is obviously totally different than what I like, because she has no preconceived notion of what's happening or what's going on. Like, she likes Bianca just because she likes Bianca. She thinks she's cool, stuff like that. But yeah, absolutely. I wish. And this was a time that we didn't know any of this. Like, we didn't, you know, how old we were, you know, other people I'm sure did, but even then, you know, kayfabe was still alive, still is today, but that's different. That's a different conversation. So Great American Bash, though, that June, Bischoff kind of accepted the challenge, told Hall and Nash that, you know, that they would find, or, you know, he would come up with three people. He knew who they were. He wouldn't reveal it on the spot. And so I went back and watched this clip. It was actually kind of cool to see, after Bischoff refusing to tell Hall and Nash exactly who the three people would be. Nash gave a power bomb to Bischoff. It was actually off the stage through a table. It actually did look pretty good. I went back.
It looked awesome.
Yeah. I went back and watched the clip. It's actually one of those that was worth going back and kind of checking out.
And that was before, I mean, that was that was before that kind of stuff happened a lot. I mean, you know, now it's like, you know, again, it's just your eyes trained that, like, when, you know, an entrance is built, you're like, okay, what could somebody get thrown through? Right. Yeah. But back then that just didn't happen. I mean, they had those, like, two, you know, whatever tarp things on each side. And it was one of the better, like, stage bumps ever. And again, now we're conditioned to see them, but
it didn't look super worked. Yeah. Which was part of why it went over as well as it did. So,
and that's why I get frustrated, Jeff, sometimes when like that Jericho spot he took, like, you can make a really safe bump look really, really good. Like, you could have had a huge pad under there, but the way it was shot, he just gets dropped into darkness and you're like, holy shit, you know? And versus, you know, now it's like you see the crash pad and it's like, well, how come in 1996 you were better at shooting this shit than you are now?
Well, did you see the secret hand at Hell in the Cell moving the table?
No. What,
I know you've been out of town.
I heard about it, but I didn't know what happened.
I know that you were on holiday yourself, as I like to say. And I was. It was a gif of a hand underneath the ring, kind of moving the table that Drew went through, like, kind of back into place. The camera angle was weird. Like, you couldn't
see. So whose hand was it?
We don't know. It was obviously
came from under the ring.
It was obviously someone that there was some kind of crash pad. There was something that we didn't see. And then when the camera cut back to them, they were moving the crash pad out, which we didn't see a crash pad ever.
Are you talking about the choke slam spot off the apron?
Yes. That Lashley gave to McIntyre,
which was an awesome spot.
But after the fact, they caught this hand that was like moving the table back into place. And the only thing everybody can assume is that there was some kind of crash pad underneath. And because
when he took that bump, I'm like, holy shit. So maybe they had a little bit of a pad, cause there's no crowd, obviously. So they had a little bit of a pad. They removed the pad or something like that.
Yeah. And the hand trying to put the table back so it looked how it should. You caught the hand. Yeah.
You think Kevin Dunn will get fired over this?
I doubt it, because Kevin Dunn will never get fired. And no. So
he'll be there after Vince is gone.
My dislike of Kevin Dunn is a story for a different day, but yeah. So how many quick cuts can you get in a 5 second spot? So, okay. So anyways, the next night after you got Bischoff going through the table, it's a Monday Nitro. You have Savage, Sting, and Lex Luger chosen as the ones to face the Outsiders. So, but even though at first Bischoff wouldn't reveal his partner or his team, the Outsiders are not revealing the identity of their third person, but just continuing to really just, you know, interrupt at events, kind of just be a thorn in the side for really the better part of a month in the kind of lead up to this. So that's with Hall and Nash, what the Outsiders is doing. So what was going on with, you know, we've got, I'll say Team WCW on this one. Savage, World War III, actually, it was November 1995, just a few months prior to this, 6-8 months. He actually won his first WCW World Heavyweight Championship. It was the 60-man, three-ring battle royal at World War III. After that, he kind of, you know, was feuding with Flair really through the first half of 1996. Sting, this is when we started to get I say, like, you know, darker Sting, not the full turn yet. You know, we hadn't gotten that to this point, but we were starting to see it a little bit, like even in this match, his hair's a little bit longer. The tights are, you know, a little bit darker. They got the face paint, but you know, it's still one of those where Sting was starting to change a little bit. And we'll talk about that more in the aftermath in regards to, you know, what was happening. And so, but this was still, I say, you know, the America Sting, you know, all that. And he did have the scorpion on his tights, but you know, we'll get there. So, but he also did some tag work with Lex Luger and Booker T. It actually worked with Lex quite a bit. I kind of dealing with this both before and after, but we'll get there. And then Luger, is actually uncensored March 1996. He was a part of, and it's on our list to one day covered, but the Alliance in the Tower of Doom steel cage match. This was, taking on Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. It was Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage beating Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Ming, the Barbarian, Lex Luger, the Taskmaster, Z Gangsta, and the Ultimate Solution, in the Doomsday cage match. This one, it was just a mess, but you know, Luger actually costing his team the match after he hit Flair on that one. And so he had been involved with that a little bit. But, and like I said, just in right, the quick lead up into this one, the Bischoff promised we were going to get a 6-man tag match. They were calling it a hostile takeover match. And that, you know, just before this, you have Hall and Nash coming to the ring by themselves. So even they're in the ring as you and I have the match kind of queued up at this point. They are standing there with just the two of them. You've got Savage, Sting, and Luger actually all wearing the old Sting style face paint, kind of to show, you know, the teamwork that they were ready to go together.
Did you like that, or did you think it was stupid?
It's gimmicky, but it works.
It probably fit 1996. I don't know. Part of me is like, they just look so stupid, especially Luger.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, it's gimmicky. I'll go with it. So that's fine. And so that's it. You've got only the five men. We still, as of this match, have no clue exactly who the sixth man will be. But we're ready to go. Thoughts, Tom?
I got plenty of thoughts. We're going to talk about them during the match. So right. Here's the deal. Bash at the Beach season 3 on Peacock.
So stupid.
Yeah. And for those of you that are, oh, by the way, I was in Mexico last week and Peacock didn't work down there.
Oh, really? Oh,
after I went to watch like The Office before bed one night, this thing wouldn't work. I was so pissed off. And I'm like, well, I wonder if my WWE network will work here. So
Did you check your network?
Yeah. So whether your network or your Peacock, a 2-hour and 21-minute mark on the dot, 2-hour, 21-minute Bash the Beach 96. Jeff, are you ready?
Let's do it, man. Count it down.
All right, it is time for the payoff.
Oh, it's time for the payoff.
They look so stupid in this face paint.
Face paint, yeah. So that's, yeah, that kind of mismatched kind of look.
All right.
Getting right into it. Okay.
Luger Hall in the ring to start. I mean, Scott Hall just looks like a million bucks at this point, man. Like, just peak of his career physically and great in the ring.
Everybody looks great. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, well, I guess they all do. You're right. Yeah. I mean, they all look fantastic.
I mean, Hall and Nash, were they ever higher than kind of like right now? Like, I'm sure there were times, but like they were pretty sky high at this point. Like, kind of crazy. Yeah.
So I'm on this major TNA kick right now. And the reason being,
yeah, you said that. Yeah.
Well, I've been listening to Jeff Jarrett's podcast and it's really, really good. It's like the best thing Conrad's doing right now. Yep. So I'm listening to it and I started watching some TNA in the morning when I'm doing my cardio. Here's what's interesting. All six of these guys in this match wrestled in TNA.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
Yeah, and you and I have not done. We've been trying to include more TNA.
We're going to do more of it because there's so many hidden gems.
We've got some on our list. We've been trying to cover more. We hear the fans, stuff like that. Because and it is funny because people don't even me like realize like how much like. Even like, you know, some of the AEW wrestlers too, like carried that company for a long time. Like Christian was their champ for a while. Oh, like, yeah. You know,
Luger's knocked out on the outside of the ring. And I guess the purpose of this is we get kind of a 2-on-2 tag match at this point. Then I remember, you know, as I'm watching this, you know, as a 12-year-old, I'm thinking, oh, Luger's going to be the bad guy, right? He's going to come back. And this was all like staged so he could come back. So, you know, you think you're going to get that. So by the way, Luger, he was the one I'm like, there's no way he wrestled in TNA. He did. I found a clip and I was like, oh, you know, how's this look, man? He had like, not a massive gut, but he like had a gut on him. And here's what I couldn't believe is he's coming down to the ring. They're like, Lex Luger has not wrestled in 3 years. The last time you saw him was on WCW, and he's coming out right after Miss Elizabeth died. And I'm like, what? So I'm like, first of all, like, you know, I probably needed the money or whatever, but I just couldn't believe it. So What a lame way to knock him out of the ring. They're showing the replay.
They're showing it right now. Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, I just couldn't believe like they acknowledged that on commentary. I thought that was really weird.
That was kind of cheap. You just kind of got pinned under Nash. It really wasn't anything abnormal, but yeah. So they're playing it up, like you said. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so Luger's out, motionless. They're holding his neck. I mean, okay.
Doing the typical stretcher job. Yep.
Yeah, and usually something bigger happens for a stretcher job. So, right. Jeff, you know I love giving you some trivia.
Let's go.
Okay. Total, and this is all incarnations of it. Total, how many members of the NWO were there?
And you're talking everything, Wolfpack,
like, talking everything,
everything.
WWE's version at the end there.
Oh shit. It's probably higher than I think. And so I'm going to guess 40,
42.
Oh fuck. Okay.
Wow. Really good.
Yeah. You figure there had to be just like, random, like, you know, just random people that you're not really thinking of, and who are they, you know, who are they including and not including and all that. And especially too, yeah, that even like if you include that like you said, that time frame at the end there, like, you know, where it was you know, Jeff Jarrett and Bret Hart for you know, short stint. Yeah, absolutely.
So let me quickly give you some noteworthy things. I'm not going to run through all 42. Obviously, okay. We start with Hall, then Nash, Hogan. The right. Fourth man was Ted DiBiase. He shows up on Nitro on August 26, 1996. And he has almost a year-long run with the company. So those are your first four. Gosh, and it's just funny. It's like it kind of went downhill. Then they do the Giant, which was kind of stupid. And that only lasted for 4 months. You got the NWO Sting. Then you got X-Pac, which was good. Then you threw in Virgil.
Which, did you see Virgil made the news again?
I did, yes. I charged Brooke Hogan $20 for a selfie.
$30 for an autograph, but I don't know if she went for that. But yeah, that's good for him, though, making that money.
Then you get Miss Elizabeth, the Nasty Boys I didn't even remember. Then the big reveal of Bischoff, Bagwell, IRS, Big Boss Man, Norton, Chono, Savage, Muda, Tenzin, Conan, Kurt Hennig, Rick Rude, Louis Spicoli, didn't remember that. Dusty Rhodes, I do remember him turning heel one point. Crush, Scotty Steiner, Brutus Beefcake, Nick Patrick.
And through this whole time, if I remember right, like, you still, though, had... Like, it never really broke from the quote, like, head of the NWO. Like, it was still Hall, Nash, and Hogan. Even after all these names you're running through right now, like, it was still Hall, Nash, all that stuff. Yeah.
So then there was, you know, so then, yeah, you're right. You had the Hollywood and then the Wolfpack. Then you had, and I don't even remember them calling themselves this, but the NWO Elite. And that was after the Finger Poke of Doom. So that was kind of a scaled down version. Then they had Black and White, which was like the B team. And then there was the NWO 2000, which I just remember reading about. But that was when Hart, Jeff Jarrett, Nash, Hall, Scotty Steiner, and a few others. So, you know, I mean, man, it's exhausting. And then, and the final member, I'll give you one more piece of trivia and then we'll move off of this. The final member ever, the final new member ever of the NWO was who, Jeff?
The final person?
Yeah. And I actually think I would have gotten this right.
I don't know.
Shawn Michaels.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, how long was his run?
He was, when he was retired, he joined.
Got it. Okay. So I'm guessing it was like him and Nash probably. And yeah.
Yep. Okay. All right. Tell everyone what's going on.
Yeah. So we're still just kind of just your standard match at this point. Like you said, Luger's gone. So you've got Sting and Macho currently in the ring, or Sting and Macho and Nash and Hall. You currently have Sting and Nash kind of going at it at this point. And so, yeah, it's been fairly standard. Like, again, there hasn't been even kind of hints or anything about who it could be at this point. Just these guys kind of going at, like I said, too, at the beginning here, like Sting somewhat retaining the old, he actually does have the scorpion on his trunks, but it's actually like a rainbow scorpion. It's not just like the black and white, like we're used to. So that's kind of interesting. They're kind of cutting the ring off. So it's, at this point, it's been a fairly standard affair in regards to the match. You got Macho trying to make some saves, but fairly standard.
So one of the names that was thrown around was Bret Hart, because remember, this is after Shawn becomes champion, and technically he wasn't under, I don't believe was under contract at this time. Although I think he had agreed to wrestle a tour in South Africa in September. But you know, I'd argue that that's probably the second best. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, think about 96 realistically, who's out there that, you know, isn't under contract. Like, I don't know if there's a better name, if it wasn't Hogan, that you could have gotten than Bret Hart.
Yeah. And I don't think there is, at least in regards to what, you know, how the reaction you could have been getting for, like, you know, that's, I feel like some of the, we've seen it in AEW, like some of the announcements that they make and the reactions they get, like, have been underwhelming. You know, at least that how they've been received online have been underwhelming, but like who is the star that you want to come back? That's actually going to be able to, I don't have any way to say it nicer other than just that's going to get you to bust a nut. Like, yeah. You know, who's going to get you excited? You know, when Jake Hagar shows up is, you know, with Jericho, like, you know, people weren't super excited about that. He's been fine since, but there's only so many names that are going to be able to get you super excited that are going to be able to go over that way. And like you said, I think if anything, this could have been the time where you saw some people like break their contract and just kind of show up. I think that, you know, this is crazy time in wrestling, so something like that could have happened. But other than Hogan and Bret, like who? Like,
But even play it out with Bret, if Bret came out, you would have known it was him immediately. That's the beauty of it, is Hogan comes out and you're like, oh, it's a WCW wrestler. He's a good guy. He's coming for the save. If Bret came out, the minute you saw Bret, you'd be like, holy shit, he's the third man. So it would have actually been as surprising. And then again, I think if it would have been Sting, this whole thing could have been gone in a few months. I mean, it could have flamed out real quick.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, I think that we'll talk about in the aftermath, just kind of how important what's about to happening was. But yeah, and I think too, and you know, there's a reason it's 83 weeks and why they, you know, Bischoff calls it that, you know, of how, you know, them dominating after this point and kind of what happened. So Macho trying to pump up the crowd too. But yeah, it's just crazy. Yeah.
So you want some Meltzer takes?
Everyone always wants some Tom Meltzer takes.
Yeah. So this quote, and I'm quoting Meltzer here, no doubt Jeff Jarrett and Ted DiBiase will join the group in the fall when their Titan contracts expire. The Nasty Boys teased on Nitro jumping to the group, and no doubt a few others will jump along. Blah, 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 blah. Titan talent who's under contract comes to you, such as Davey Boy Smith. So if you throw enough names out there, eventually you'll be right. Jeff Jarrett, obviously, wrong. DiBiase did join. Davey Boy Smith did not join. Nasty Boys did eventually. You know, the other famous thing, of course, is the Mabel thing. And so do you want that quote? Let me pull it up for you here.
Yeah. If you got it handy. Yeah.
Now absolutely. I will give Meltzer credit. So on the July 8th Observer, my feeling is that it's Hulk Hogan, because a reader who was working on the set of the movie said Roddy Piper and Hogan were talking about it. So he had the scoop there. which would have sucked if you actually read the Observer. Now, of course, that was July 8th. So I believe you would have received that after the pay-per-view aired on July 7th. Of course, I don't know when you would have received it in the mail. But here's the July one that's famous with everyone. And I quote, "As for the identity of the third party in the 7-7 main event, it's really a secret. Lex Luger, who was the original plan," which Bischoff said no, "I can't see that happening because it would almost be an exact duplicate of the Steve McMichael angle. It could still happen, but I don't think." Bischoff, Hall, and Nash were discussing names this past week with Mabel as the top contender. Let me repeat, with Mabel as the top contender. Crush being considered.
Yeah, and that I almost wonder how much of it is a plant. Like, it has to be. Like, you know, whatever his sort, hey, you know, you always wonder, you see in the movies, like they put, you know, the three lies out there. And then whichever one comes back through the pipeline, you can find out who's leaking and stuff like that. Like that one, I feel like has to be a planted leak because it just makes no sense at all.
Well, and here's the issue again. When I read these things, that's not journalism.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not. That's you and I bullshitting at a bar, having a couple beers. Oh, I think it might be this. Oh, I think it might be this. Now, he had some sources, but it's this weird thing where it's like, and again, he is what he is. He's made a very nice living in professional wrestling. Yep. I don't begrudge him for that. But I think the challenge with it is always, what is it? Because a lot of it's just fantasy. A lot of it's just speculation. A lot of it's editorial, okay, which isn't saying, hey, Tom Brady signed with the Tampa Bay Bucks. It's saying, hey, you know, I think Tampa might be a landing spot, but, yeah, Denver could be a really good spot as well. And yeah, I think that, you know, Denver's actually very interested. I mean, you're just making stuff up. You're filling out words.
But so
that's not journalism.
I remember at the time too, there's Brady was going to Detroit, but anyways, yeah. Like, but that, you know, just shit like that. Absolutely.
So it's just, you know, again, so it's not journalism. If he was actually doing journalism, he'd have about 25% of a newsletter each week in terms of words. So you got to add on run-on sentences. You have to add in speculation. You have to editorialize and write columns on this stuff. So you're a movie critic and you're a journalist and you're kind of just making some shit up based on some sources that are working you. And you get this Observer and you get this thing. So what is this thing? And, I mean, it's absolutely not journalism. It's not completely a column. But it, you know, it's been helpful. It's great to refer back to. It's great that there's some history of this stuff. But it's interesting.
Well, and I take your point about the, like, you know, having, you know, these, you know, is he a journalist? Is he not? Like, hey, we finally get the hot tag from Macho. This goes back to, again, breaking, you know, recently, like all the releases and things that were happening, but your thoughts on, and I have thoughts too, this match is coming to a close, so we may have to cut it short, but the writer saying that she knows nothing about wrestling and then her getting fired for going on a podcast and saying so.
I mean, it's idiotic. So let's stop being marks here for a second and let's think real world. Okay. And real world is, I got hired to do something and I'm now telling people that love that company that I know nothing about that company.
Yeah.
Right. So, I'm trying to think of a good example of something. A good example, I don't watch Lord of the Rings, but I just got hired to be a writer for the upcoming Lord of the Rings movie.
Yes.
And Jeff, I've never seen the shit before. Well, as a fan, you're going to go, what the fuck?
Yep.
Right? I mean, clearly, and there's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, I'm not a cancel guy. I'm not a fire everyone every time someone screws up. That's not my shtick.
I got to stop you because Hogan has come down and has ripped off the shirt and has now given the first leg drop, second leg drop to Macho Man. And so now the mystery person high-fiving fans look and everyone's on their feet. No one knows what's happening.
They're in absolute shock, right?
And here comes, I saw a piece of it, but here comes the first of the debris that we will start to see getting thrown into the ring. So Macho Man's laid out. Sting is laid out. You got Hall, Nash, and Hogan now in the ring, tossing the ref out. Ref
bump. And Hogan even has like a different look on his face, right? He just looks mean.
Yeah, he really does. Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's just all kind of crazy. Yeah, like one, I don't care who they hire, but yeah, I would not go out and say, hey, I know nothing about this either. Like,
yeah, so I don't, should she have been fired? I don't know, but it was just idiotic to do it. And I actually completely understand people being upset about it. Now, I wouldn't attack her personally, but I just say, it's kind of stupid. So,
well, and I think that's how WWE framed it, I'm sure, is because they weren't happy that she said it.
But here's the frustration. When I read it, here's my frustration. Right now, you see Hulk Hogan turning heel after all these years. You have Hall and Nash, the outsiders that were part of the other company, and they're jumping. And now we're shooting. So we're not scripting. We're shooting, right? We're just shooting from the hip. All this stuff happens. A non-wrestling fan couldn't create this. Yeah. You have to know the business to be able to create it. So that's where my frustration is when someone says, hey, I'm not a fan of this. I'm just a writer. It's like, no, I need people that love this, that understand it, that respect the history of it. You know, that's what we need. And, you know, I mean, where did this come from? This came from Eric Bischoff, a fan. Right. I mean, that's how he got into the damn business. So, I mean, this trash, dude, it's insane to think about. Like, what would even happen in this day and age if you had all this trash being sent in?
That was like a full like cup of something getting thrown all the way across the ring. Yeah. The ring is now getting scattered with garbage.
Dude, they're just lucky. They're lucky that this was the end of the show. So most of those drinks are probably empty. And like, if someone had a beer, it's probably like mostly empty at this point.
Well, it actually looks nice. Like a lot of that stuff is crumpled up, which is surprising. So yeah, me and Gene in the ring. So if we want to talk about the aftermath, we kind of let this play out as well too, as we're going to talk about it. Cause we're going to talk about what they're saying. So
yeah, we may refer to it, but dude,
yep.
Just so good. One other comment before we flip off. Yeah. Those Kevin Nash tights that are all red, I thought were just so hideous. Like, why not do black ones that look like Diesel with a little bit of red writing?
I like Hall currently just posing and playing it up too.
Yep. Like doing the Hulk Hogan pose.
Mean Gene getting hit with the garbage and stuff. Yeah, just fantastic. So, okay.
All right, let's get into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right, initial thoughts.
Come on. Like, you know, it just iconic. They're, you know, I hate using that word all the time, but like, this is one of those that, you know, I wouldn't even say iconic, but in regards to just altering the landscape of wrestling, this is at the top of the mountain.
You don't you don't need your old pals, Tom and Jeff, to tell you that this is awesome.
Yeah, plain and simple. Like, we could tell you that, you can watch it, stuff like that, but there's no other way to kind of cut it. Because yeah, it just top of the mountain. How about you?
It's awesome. It's perfect.
Right. So, okay.
Look at Hogan's boots. He's like wearing like cowboy boots.
Yeah.
I never noticed that.
All right. So what do we have here? So like we said, right? Mean Gene is now in the ring, kind of, you know, Hogan is cutting the promo, kind of shooting from the hip on some of this as well too. But the biggest piece of this that comes out of it is, you know, him saying that this is now the New World Order of wrestling, which of course then giving the name the New World Order. So, you know, it pretty much now you have Hogan after this being renamed Hollywood Hogan, you know, and continuing to really, you know, take over. He just got hit pretty good with, they're getting hit pretty good and showered with everything in the ring at this point. Hogan is like drenched. Really a week later, you had the NWO. They were attacking Lex and Big Bubba after one of their matches. About 2 weeks later, you had them attacking Arn Anderson and the American Males, Rey Mysterio, you know, just really kind of being assholes. Hog Wild, it was August 1996. So about a month later, really the following pay-per-view. pay-per-view, Hogan beating the Giant to be the WCW World Heavyweight Champion. And of course, this is the moment about a month later where we get the infamous, famous, whatever you want to call it, spray painting the NWO onto the belt, you know, rechristening it as then the, you know, it is NWO's championship at that point.
Look at these cops just walking around like, what the hell are they supposed to do, right?
Yep. And so we are now in the, you know, we're cutting into the ring. The ring is just scattered. There's cops walking around the ring. He's still cut the promo and there's just trash being showered. You almost can see like the face, like we'll take a sec here. The faces on Hall and Nash, like, you know, they know, look at them. Like they know like what is happening. You got to figure they're in the moment right now and understand it.
If you look, and I don't know if he still looks this way, kind of does. I mean, if you look at Hall and Nash, it's like they know that this, I mean, every piece of trash might as well be money because they know that this is fucking money. This angle, the heel turn, it worked. It was perfect. I bet you there was a small part of them that were like, Hogan, you know, he's old, you know, he's stale. And then look at him, dude. I mean, it was just so good. You know, you and I've talked about this before. Hogan says it. Who knows if it's true or not, but he claims that he wanted to be Hollywood Hogan after WrestleMania 6 by going back to the ring and turning on the Warrior. And you just think about a heel Hulk Hogan in all black feuding against the Ultimate Warrior. I mean, rematch at WrestleMania 7 or something,
just like printing money.
Yeah. Oh, dude, he would have had, I mean, it would have, I mean, a part-time heel Hogan, it, you know, in WrestleMania 7, 8, 9, 10. I mean, this would have never happened because he never would have left. I mean, so just interesting to think about. I mean, they blew it. They blew it because whatever hesitation you have about Hogan as a heel, he was an awesome heel. Let's be honest. And you know, that adds another layer to his legacy, right? I always gain a little extra respect for those that did both the heel and baby face thing really, really well. And there's not many of them out there where you can be, you know, like how many guys out there are Hall of Fame heels and Hall of Fame baby faces? Like,
oh yeah.
Hogan, obviously. Right. I mean, like, I'm just talking like world-class, The Rock. I think he was a Hall of Famer as both. Austin, I don't know if he was not a Hall of Fame heel, right? But he was a Hall of Fame babyface. I mean, was Flair ever a Hall of Fame babyface? Yeah, probably not.
Not really what he was known for,
Yeah, so again, I'm just talking like how many people did both. Like Diesel, was Diesel a Hall of Fame babyface? No, he wasn't. I think you could argue Shawn Michaels did both really, really well. You know, but again, there's not a lot of guys that did both really, really well. And so I think that's one of the things about Hogan that, you know, I have a lot of respect for is just how good he was in this role. And who knows if, you know, 1992, this would have worked, but I just have to think it would have. I think you could even make an argument, Jeff, that a heel Hogan after WrestleMania 6 would have been more villainous than this Hogan, because this Hogan eventually kind of got cheered.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and how they played it and the angle and all that. Yeah, and that makes sense. But it's just kind of looking back on it. You know, of course, the what ifs are always interesting. And so, but I think that, you know, this is how it played out. I don't know how it could have been better. So, so quick notes on just everybody else, though, just, you know, real quick. Of course, you had the Outsiders. They ended up winning the tag team championships at this point, kind of creating the Wolf Pack in 1997. Defending the titles against the Nasty Boys, the Faces of Fear, Barbarian and Ming, just kinds of all different things. Luger, you know, kind of being one of the main people to kind of go against the NWO, had a match, him and the Giant against the Outsiders. So they won the tag team championships in early 1997 from them. But of course, it was immediately Bischoff, you know, he is, you know, giving the title back to them. And so just kind of interesting how that played out. Sting kind of defending as well, too. You have Sting getting a little bit darker after this as well too. So him kind of playing that up and, you know, kind of feuding with Flair, no, teaming with Flair and Anderson. There was the War Games match as well too, with Team WCW, and just kind of doing that. That was the imposter Sting angle as well too. And kind of getting into that a little bit, which we'll talk about a different day. Yeah. So that kind of led to as well, Roddy Piper coming back and confronting Hogan as well too. So you had some of that, you know, with Savage and those types of things going on. And so there's really, you know, it's just such a major part of not just WCW, but wrestling history as a whole. Like, you know, everything, like, you know, that's why I talk about stables all the time on this show. And I wish we had more stables and things like that. I know, yeah, like NXT is trying to do a little bit more of it and things like that. It's proven that it can work. Like, you know, this and DX, like, you know, no, you don't need 42 members, but over time, but
Just try it more often. You know, I know there's talk of the New Day being reunited on Raw and Big E still being a singles. Great. Put them together, have a singles guy and have a tag guy. I think 3-on-3 matches make things a little bit more interesting. Mix it up, have some. Dude, I mean, you know, you and I've talked about this before, but Shield, Wyatt, 3-on-3 in the ring. People went absurd before they rang the bell. So are you going to recreate the NWO? No. But can you recreate DX? Shit, maybe. Can you recreate another New Day? Why not? Can you recreate a Wyatt and not screw it up this time? Sure. I mean, I don't know what because if I care about the Wyatts and I'm like, wow, they're kind of crazy and out there. And then all of a sudden when Luke Harper is one-on-one against someone else, I kind of care more because he's part of that faction that I actually find interesting. That's where like the NWO rub. It was like, you know, X-Pac became a bigger star because he was part of the NWO. And if they wouldn't have watered it down, it could have really been a big deal to become part of that. Look, they're Batista and Orton. What are they without, you know, that faction?
Evolution. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and Michael Hayes is still backstage. Why don't we have the Freebird rule more often? Like, defend it. You got your stables. Like, let them, like, that's how you can get more people. That's why it was enjoyable, because you actually didn't know who of the New Day was going to be defending the title that day. So give us the opportunity to see some different people. Let us, you know, give us that chance, things like that. Like, that's what we kind of see. That's what we kind of want. Okay, so we got to get into our payoff scores at this point. Well, actually, we got to get into the reviews. We got to talk our payoff scores. But Tom, we forgot to talk about something in the opening of the show. It's show 99, and I can't believe, like, we're Independence Day. Like, we haven't talked about Manscaped once today.
Well, that's a mistake. We need to.
I know. Like, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, like, and you know, and people online said, hey, you know, we need to.
4th of July, Lawnmower 4.
4.0. I don't understand. You know, we've got, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, summer right now. I am now a weekly trimmer, like, you know, once a week, that's all you need it. But hey, it's worth the money at that point. You know,
what do you do? Like, pour a glass of red wine and do it on a Friday night?
Yeah, light some candles. Actually, it typically is Friday night. And so we're cutting into that. We're recording today. It's kind of cutting into that time. But there's nothing wrong with, you know, lighting myself a nice Bath and Body Works candle and just going to town. So, but this is one, of course, and everybody knows this, you know, just great products. Tom and I don't bullshit you on this one. I'm not even going to read from the copy on this one because I don't need to, because all of you know, like, as much as we could, Tom and I endorse these products. We have a bunch of these products. We keep ordering them ourselves because they are no bullshit. Like, we are absolutely all about them. And so, as it always has been, it's 20% off, free shipping with the code payoff. You know, start getting your Christmas presents early. You know, why not? Like, start thinking about those things, like, tuck a few bucks aside and start ordering those things and put it away. Like, you know, manscaped.com, 20% off, free shipping. The code is payoff. It's super easy. You know, you put everything in the cart. It's just like any other website. You get it quick. Like, you know, you don't have to worry about it. And it's been hotter than hell this summer. And trust me, it's worth it.
Agreed. I use all the products. I love them. Just go on the website, browse it, see if there's anything you like. Manscaped.com. Payoff is the code. 20% off, free shipping, and it gets there fast as hell. So,
okay. All right. So PWI rankings for all these guys. So,
oh boy,
Hulk number 8, Nash. Actually, I'm going to work in reverse order because it'll be a little bit easier here. Hall was 34. You had Savage at 21. Luger was 17. Hulk at 8, Nash at 6, Sting at 3. And so this is probably, in regards to a group match, the lowest rank or highest, if you will, lowest, highest rankings that we've ever had. When you average it out. Absolutely. And so, and like tightest kind of grouped up. Absolutely. So Wade Keller on this one, we've got a lot of reviews to read on this one, so this should be good. So Wade Keller, Hulk Hogan did what many thought would never happen in some WCW officials feared he'd never do up until a few seconds before he leg dropped Randy Savage. He turned heel. The turn answered the most anticipated question in years of pro wrestling. Who would be the third man at the July 7th bash at the Beach pay-per-view? The deal had been slated for many weeks, but not finalized until a few days before the angle occurred. And even a week or two before the angle, WCW was searching for possible backup plans. Hogan sort of turned heel last year, but backed out of going full-fledged heel. There were fears that he wouldn't do it again. The entire event was built around who the third man would be. The build-up was such that there were really only five possibilities. Hulk Hogan, a member of the babyface team, Randy Savage, Sting, and Lex Luger, or free agent Bret Hart. No one else was either available or a big enough deal to warrant the type of hype being given to this angle. WCW effectively built anticipation of who the third man would be to the point that any good match was merely an unwanted distraction from an upcoming main event. The match served its purpose very well, but without the storyline would have just been okay. So he gave the match 2.5 stars. One of the beat writers on this was, I agree 100% that Hulk Hogan should have been the third man. If you are going to have a team of WWF invaders, who could be better than the man that was the WWF? However, it could have been nice if the match that introduced him could have been at least a tiny bit heated and set the stage for a big entrance. Everything about this angle was done to perfection, from the introduction of Hall, then Nash, then the appearances together, and the assault of Bischoff. The only thing that has failed is the actual match. I know full well that many U.S. fans feel strongly that the matches do not mean a hell of a lot. They have been educated to a hot angle, the raving interview, the loud rock and roll ring entrance. Give them the three things and many are more than satisfied. This is another thing we can blame Vince for. So the Observer Newsletter 3 stars on this one. After a 15-year babyface run, Hulk Hogan turned heel amidst incredible heat in an angle that will be remembered for years as the climax of WCW's Bash at the Beach. The heat, with a literal flood of debris being thrown at the ring, was as intense as anything that we've seen in U.S. rings at a major arena. The half-shoot, half-work interview was strong and focused enough that it incited enough heat that fans in the building were ripping up and throwing down their Hogan merchandise, and a few people were even crying. Hogan had agreed to do the heel turn about 11 days before the show, largely because there was no place left in WCW for him had he chosen not to do so. Hogan's contract with WCW was scheduled to expire after 2 more pay-per-view shows, the Hog Wild and then Halloween Havoc in Vegas, where by virtue of a sponsorship deal with Slim Jim's, they had long promised a Hogan versus Randy Savage main event.
Gosh, which means, you know, Macho, because I read that as well, Macho could have gone over, and yep, that could have been Hogan's final, and frankly not had a lot of leverage. And then you say, okay, so where are we at? Let's just fantasy book this for a little bit, or at least think about storyline standpoint. We're headed into WrestleMania 13. Shawn's about to lose his smile. Taker, Sid, Hogan would have been in the world title picture if he went back at this point.
Yep.
You know, I mean, with everything going on, it would have been get the belt back on Hogan, Hogan posing at the end of WrestleMania 13 in red and yellow.
Yep.
Probably absolutely, by beating Sid to get back his WrestleMania 8 DQ. Right? I mean, isn't that, it's just wild to think about. Think about WrestleMania 13, you know, Taker ending the show as world champion. More importantly, Bret Hart, Austin, double turn, you know, Austin becomes a megastar, Hart, killer heel turn. Imagine some or all of that being blown up and Hogan posing at the end of WrestleMania 13. And I'm not saying that like it should have happened or would have been a good thing, but it's just interesting to think about what easily could have happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Just crazy. So how about our scores? What are you feeling here, buddy?
This is an easy one for me. It's a 10.
Yep.
The build to it was awesome. Yeah. The match, it was what was, nothing great, but you know, frankly, there's not a lot of WCW main events that are that good. It was your run of the mill, you know, older veteran WCW talent in a main event. Nothing spectacular is going to happen from a bump standpoint or, you know, anything like that. But yeah, I mean, it was the ending. Didn't see it coming. Didn't know it was going to happen. You know, I thought the way they set it up where here comes the hero and he's coming out looking like a baby face. And then he drops the leg. The fact it was on Savage, the promo after was great. The trash, you know, him cutting the heel promo on Mean Gene. There's not a better person to be in the ring than that. So again, all of it, just great. The only things you could knock are the match, but whatever. And then you could knock the fact that, hey, this angle, it, you know, 2020 hindsight, as good as the NWO was for that stretch, how could we have, how, you know, here's the interesting thing. I mean, we could play this game all day, but if the NWO angle had been done better and maybe, you know, they hadn't tried expanding the roster and making an NWO show out of Thunder. And if things had happened differently in Turner, I mean, WCW could still be around today. And frankly, there could be some incarnation of the NWO. And I know that sounds crazy, but 19 years later, here we are, and TNA is still a thing, right? I mean, it's still like, so anything can happen, right, in wrestling. And I just wonder about, hey, you know, could that faction have been kept smaller, kept super elite, figured out a way to, you know, guys coming and going a lot less frequently. What could have happened? It's interesting to think about. So there are some things you can knock, but overall, 10, incredible. Loved it. One of the best moments in the history of professional wrestling. Jeff.
Yeah, I have to give it a 10. There's just no other way to cut it. And this was, and I was looking at it too. So this was really, this was the third week of the 83 weeks. And so where Nitro just dominated everything. And so this capped all of that off with them beating them for the better part of two more years. And so to say that, you know, how they changed the landscape on this, like, yeah, it has to be a 10. There's no other.
So yeah, no, I'm sorry. Let me add one more thought. Think about today's product. And we think about the fact that, gosh, it's just a little stale. It'd be better if there was, I think about it and I'm like, keep taking chances because you never know when you're one angle away or one or two megastars away from the business just taking off again. And maybe it'll never look the same as 10 million people watching live on a Monday night. You know, it'll be different, right? But the interest will be there and it'll be different measure. It'll be social media. It'll be Peacock viewers, whatever it is. But oh my God, you think about that and you're like, think about how bad wrestling was in 1995. Cartoonish, lousy, just shitty, right? And then 96, you've got Austin, you got The Rock debuting at Survivor Series. You've got the NWO. I mean, arguably the three biggest things to happen in wrestling in the last 25 years were the NWO, Austin, and The Rock.
Yep.
And they all happened within 6 months of each other. And two of them happened within 2 weeks of each other. So you just never know when that could come. And I hope we get it again. And I don't know who that star will be or what that angle will be. But man, it's just, I'd love to see something like that again that just captures us all.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's what we can always hope for. So, well, good stuff. Great match. Hey, and we haven't said it. Like, you know, we're at the end of 99 now. We've got 100 is next. If they've made it to the end of this episode, Tom, I feel like we need to tell them.
It's a long episode. There's too much to talk about. I don't care. I mean, this was fantastic. I loved it. There was just so much stuff to cover in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but who do we got next week, Tom? Are you willing to reveal to the masses who we have actually booked for next week? We're doing the show a little different because we have an incredibly special guest that we're bringing on. Are you willing to tell the Payoff fans who that is, Tom?
For our 100th episode, we are going to discuss the greatest tag team breakup in history. The Rockers, Shawn Michaels throwing Marty Jannetty through the barbershop window. There's so much to talk about. And it wouldn't be the 100th episode without a special guest. So joining us next week, the one, the only, Marty Jannetty. I cannot wait. It is going to be so much fun. We appreciate you listening. We can't wait for the 100th episode. Thank you for joining us on the ride, and we'll see you next week on an all-new episode of The Payoff.